Welcome to the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 082.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
Welcome back to the Veterinary Project Podcast. You are joined, yours truly, Dr. Michael Bug, Dr. Jonathan Light. Another day in paradise. What's happening, buddy?
Oh, I am shedding my skin, Jonathan. I was in Florida and I hit the sunscreen far too late and I got just walloped by the sun. So anyone on YouTube, I am literally just peeling. So the worst of my face is over, but now I'm shedding like all the skin on my body. It's disgusting. So TMI for all the listeners.
You shared a couple of Instagram pictures for everybody. And yeah, like you said, TMI, it was coming off to say the least. But when you weren't shedding, how was the Florida trip? How was it meeting the bros that you've been working, you know, virtually with over the last couple of years?
Yeah, it kind of felt like maybe online dating and then finally meeting for the first time because I hadn't met any of them. But the trip was phenomenal. Very good trip. Great. Really, the intention of it was a mastermind. So, I mean, we didn't do a lot of sightseeing per se. You know, we did a boat trip. We went to like a pool party sort of area. It was just sort of putting ourselves in situations to mastermind. And it was a great trip.
Yeah, sounds like you got into some deep conversation, set yourself up, and coming back on a non-drinking setup for you don't know how long. Not that you went hard on the drinking even there, it sounded like too, which is good.
No, yeah, and I think I'm going to go 6 months and then see, but I had said this even before I went to Florida. Exactly. This was coming from that big leap, upper limiting.
Yep.
I just want to try it out, see how it goes.
So Mike shared that book on the last one, and Candace and I, my wife, we're going through it right now. That is a great book for anybody that is interested. We talked about it, so we're talking about it two episodes in a row now, The Big Leap.
Yeah, it's yep. good awareness about what holds you back.
Agreed. Well, we have an interesting episode today. We're going to take the podcast a little bit of a different direction, as we're apt to do at times. And today is what we are terming our first 3x5. What? That's right. We are doing a 3x5, which is nothing more than three questions that we're going to focus on. And we're going to try, and the word imperative being try, to limit it to 5 minutes for each question. Today's focus, as we've done in the past, is focusing on investing. That is something that Mike does as his full-time job now, and that both of us have a large interest in, and that every veterinarian or veterinary technologist listening, if you are still listening, should be a part of, because this is what sets us up for success in the long term. We're going to work through three questions that we've come up with, and we are not in, let's say, full agreement on some of these answers, which is perfect for
well,
the debate.
I don't even know what the last question is yet, because I said send me the questions and it
we're give it away.
I don't even know what's coming, Jonathan.
That is the best place to be in, Dr. Bug.
I know.
That's good. So we're gonna go that way. Our first 3x5, and let's get this rolling, if we may. Our first question is a basic one, but an important one, and one that, again, we have different answers to. First question, Mike, is what is your investing system? How do you set it up, track, review, make changes, etc.?
Okay, I will jump in. So my investing system has definitely changed over the years. When I started out, and I keep saying this is really me and Rosalie as a team. But when I started out, the focus really is earn more, spend less, invest that difference. And Rosalie and I did that very aggressively. We were both working full-time, good paying jobs, fairly frugal, and invested tons. I wish I would have tracked that to tell you the percent. I honestly don't know. It would have been high, far more than like the 10% you hear floated around.
And that's what I was going to ask, is high 20, is high 40, is high 50. What do you think? Just broad.
If I had to ballpark it, it'd be at least 50%. Cause like we could live off of one of our incomes, and we were just aggressively pouring money into real estate down payments.
And so that would have been 2012, 2010 in that era.
Yeah. Call that even like 2012 to 15, yep. Like kind of those years there. And then it has changed a little bit since then. So, I mean, now we're more stabilized. Obviously we've got a family. Now how we run it is more the traditional budget system, and Rosalie quarterbacks our budget. So money comes in, and then what we do is whatever our amount of our budget is. So for example, if our budget is $15,000 for the month, we invest 15%. Okay. Right. And then when our budget goes to 16 or 17 or 18, our percent that we invest continues to go up. Right. Cool. And so how we structure our finances is Rosalie quarterbacks the budgeting and the savings, and I quarterback the investing. Right. And so I structured the investing strategy that way because I want our lifestyle to be able to continually, you know, go up, but without overextending. Right. So when our monthly budget gets to $20,000 and we're investing 20%, I'm actually investing more money. Right. And I can earn more returns. And then the final piece, or sorry, jump in.
So I want to know, this is something that evolves over time. So when you started this off in 2012, and for somebody that's just getting into investing or going, you know, I'm working on a number of contracts right now, and these individuals are out of school. Most of them have debt and or have never actually had what in the veterinary space is a job that's making them, you know, pretty decent numbers in terms of salary. How did you go about working through that process of evolution? And how simple was it when you're coming up against some challenges that inevitably happen?
My comment to that would say that the system doesn't matter. Like the system matters the most. It doesn't matter how much money's flowing in. What's more important is building the habit of investing. So it doesn't matter if you made $100 volunteering for some study, that's still income. So take your percent off of that and invest it and build that habit. And then when you're getting paychecks and you have whatever, $10,000 a month coming in, you just use that same system, those same habits. The dollar amounts change, but the actions and the percentage don't.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that I would add to that, and I am definitely not as diligent. We've had times where Candace and I have sat down on a monthly basis to work through our net value or I'm totally having a mind blank now.
Like net worth?
Net worth. That's what I was after. Excuse me. And that's been a great ability for us to then get really in control of our money going in and out. And you can see the changes over time. And sometimes it feels a little laborious and boring, but wow, does that make a difference over time? We started doing that in 2011 when we did have debt, we were into our first rental property, et cetera. That was the game changer for us. Yeah. I think the second piece I would add is automating. So for us, we automate now on a monthly basis, being a family, into our ESPs, our investment funds. I don't even see those go out. They just automatically come out of our accounts. The same thing, I was on to our Visa yesterday. Those automatically just go out of my account right back in. So they're paid and we don't pay interest by the month. That was something that, again, I actually don't remember when I set that up, but it's done. And then I don't have to worry about it. And from an investing standpoint, watching those compounded returns start to kick in because we're at that 10 to 12 year timeframe since when we started, you're really starting to see that increase occur, which equals success for us long-term.
Yeah, I would agree. Rosalie and I track our net worth quarterly. Yeah. So we have the spreadsheet, and sometimes I'll update it like monthly if a statement comes in, but quarterly is where I deep dive it and like, and I agree, you have to be tracking that because, you know, what you measure, you're going to put some awareness on, and then you can improve it both on your assets and your debt. The only thing that I differ on, I don't know if it's different, it's similar. No. Of that percent that we invest,
yep.
half of that goes into deploy that now.
Yes.
And so I'll put that like into real estate or something into the stock market. And then half of that I put into what I call an opportunity fund. So, you know, it'll sort of sit there and accumulate until I see an opportunity that I want to deploy it into.
Well, let's jump into that a little bit. So we're going into question 1B. And this is how long it's taken us to go off the 3x5. We talked about this in the pre-recording, and I think it's really, really important. You're coming out of school or you're 20 years out and going, shit, I've got to retire one day. I'm making decent cash. What am I doing? You are very structured in what you set up. You're more structured than me. My money is allocated in a different way than yours is. I love how you consciously talk about an opportunity fund. And we also talked about tail events. So I'm going to bring that up in this context because there is the concept there of in investing, as there is in life, hitting home runs versus tail end or tail events in investing. Talk about what that means in your world and why we should give a shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, full disclosure on this, I am more aggressive than most when it comes to investing. So everyone's going to have to find their own comfort level. And then the other sort of quick disclaimer is this comes after the foundation is laid, right? So like you're, and we talked about this disability insurance, emergency fund, having your budgeting on track. So we're jumping to like an advanced technique. I just want to be really clear on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And this is not, this is important. Next, advice. This is opinion. This is what we do. These are our examples. Go figure it out. We always recommend that there is financial experts out there that are not us.
So for me, this is how this evolved was step number one. And if anyone listened to like my very first episode of this podcast, like way back in the day, the moment of reckoning for me was seeing one of the retired veterinarians that had owned the vet practice having to come back to work. And I was operating under the framework of just, you know, save 10% of my paycheck, invest it, and I will retire. Everything will be great and there'll be no worries. And I started thinking about, okay, well, what do I want in life? And then where am I going to get to if I follow this plan? So I did a quick, like, this is just some calculator online. If you made 100 grand a year, invested 10% of that every month, like $833 a month for 30 years, earning an 8% return, you're going to have about $1.25 million.
In 30 years.
According to this calculator, I never double checked it or anything, but a little over $1 million. That sounds great. But I will argue $1 million really isn't that much nowadays. And who knows what $1 million is going to be worth in 30 years, right? And so the life that I want for me and my family, I was like, we have to bounce out of that. I can't just do this because that's not what I want, right? So then I started looking at, okay, well, I need to get more aggressive. And the psychology of investing is very interesting to me. You'll hear people talk about like baseball analogies a lot, and they'll aim for singles, right? And singles are safe is sort of the premise there, like lower risk, but lower reward, just hit those singles. But we're operating out of a very limited framework with that analogy. And like on the psychological side, that would be even considered anchoring. So what I mean by that is like in Johnny, in baseball, what is the, what's the best thing you can do? The most runs you can score?
Grand slam.
Yeah. Four run, home run, right?
Yep.
So you're anchored by that. If your frame of mind is, I just want to hit singles. Even if you're not aware of that, you're anchoring yourself to like the best I can do is sort of a four run investment. In the investing world, that is just absolutely false.
Yep.
You can hit 40 run home runs. You can hit 50 run home runs, 60, 100 run home runs. And this happens in the world all the time. We just don't think about it that way. Like Amazon, that is a tail event. If you had invested in Amazon back when they were just selling a few books, you would be so wealthy, it would blow your mind.
I believe the latest I just looked at, because they're doing a 20-for-1 stock split, and it's 2,500% up.
Yes.
Think about the compounded returns on that.
Yeah. And so when you run the statistics on the stock market, something like, and I may be off by a few percent here, but it'll be close. Something like 40% of stocks go to zero. 40% of them just flat out lose and go to nothing. When you follow an index on the stock market, the index is driven by about 7% of the stocks. So like when we look at like the NASDAQ or the S&P 500, what we're almost looking at is how are Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google doing?
Yes. As a percentage of that overall, for sure, they make up the bulk.
Yes. So I know people have heard me talk about The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. One of the chapters in that book is dedicated to this. It's called Tails You Win. And he talks about how tail events in our life drive outcomes. And so when we talk about a tail event, everyone listening to this is fairly scientific. Think of a bell curve and think of standard deviations. Most things in life happen inside of one standard deviation. And I think, what is that? 66% of outcomes. Right? Yep. Two standard deviations captures like 95% of outcomes. So when we talk about a tail event, we're talking about something that occurs outside of the second standard deviation. Those are the 40-run home runs. And so when I structured my investments, that opportunity fund is being deployed into opportunities that I think can hit 40-run home runs or more.
And my assumption is, in the psychology that as well, you realize and recognize that the vast majorities of those are not going to hit.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a numbers game, but the like math and the game theory behind it is they definitely do not need to all hit. You don't even have like, this is where you have to fight the veterinarian in us, is you do not have to be anywhere close to a perfectionist. Like you don't even have to be 50-50.
Not even close. You will not be 50-50.
No, absolutely not. Right? Because those gains are just so significant. So backtracking to the start of my story where it's like 1.25 million, is that what I want to retire with? For me, the answer was no. And I was like, okay, how am I going to get there? So remember, you can either earn more, spend less. And like Rosalie and I were getting pretty tired of living super frugal. So we didn't really want to do that. So I had to turn the third dial, which was change the rate of return of the money we invest. So that's where my opportunity goes. And that's why tails you win. Now, this is very contrarian, right? Dave Ramsey would end this podcast right now and say, I'm an absolute idiot.
I do not believe we are on the Dave Ramsey train, for sure. Even though I have huge respect and again, just don't follow the same philosophy. But for those that do, go look up Dave Ramsey. He has some great ideas as well. Okay. Question number 2B and or possibly 3, and then an important one. How do you deal with the psychological consequences of gains and losses in your portfolio?
All righty.
Oh, yeah. I'll provide multiple stories.
Tell me a story, Johnny. Tell me a
story. My first story goes back to 2009 when I did have my first emergency job in small animal and had some money, and we were just into our first home. And I wanted to take $10,000 and go learn how to trade options. So I went and invested in a course and spent time and money and thought I was doing well and probably was. But then I actually got into trading, and that's what it was, trading or gambling, in looking back at it 12 years later. And I could not deal with the psychological ups and downs that came in with contracts trading. I was out to lunch because the $200 gain felt amazing, and the $500 loss felt horrible. And it just compounded. And in options trading, you are trading for a pretty short time window, you know, preferably in that 30 to 50 days, depending on the type of trading you're doing. And I quickly realized in a couple of months, both to the size of my bank account decreasing, as well as my psychological inability to handle the consequences of losses, that this was not for me. That ended up holding me back for the next 10 years. And I don't know how much I lost as a result of that. Psychological loss, but real loss, because I wasn't both mature enough, nor did I understand the psychological consequences that occur in anyone's portfolio. And I missed the whole 2008 and 2009 crash because I was in school. I was poor. I didn't have any investments in there. But holy heck, that was a story that I feel set me back.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is. I mean, I'm trying to decide where to jump in and what to say. Cause like that is the psychology of investing is honestly the thing that interests me the most. Like I just love psychology. Super quick tangent. I don't know why. Back in university, my roommate was in psychology. And when I should have been studying for biology, I would read his psychology textbook instead.
Right? I didn't know this.
I don't think anyone knows it because like, why would I like tell anyone that? Like, you mean to say you're not studying for what you're supposed to be? And it's like, no, like I love psychology. So I spend a ton of time trying to research and read about like behavioral investing psychology. And your story is absolutely right. Like you suffered an emotional loss, like financial loss. And then now that has impacted you going forward. I mean, I think the first step is awareness around that, you know,
completely
like being aware that emotions are going to come in play. You know, this goes back when we had Brent on the podcast. It is personal. Everyone has a different tolerance for investing. And that's where like a lot of the things that I'm saying are not going to land per se for people because we have different tolerances.
Yeah.
You know, and I work on it. You know, I think of mindfulness, which we've talked about, you know, as a great thing for veterinarians to help with the stress of their careers. It also works for investing.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Dealing with those mountains and valleys that will show up in anybody's time frame over an extended period of years as a veterinarian or veterinary professional, it's inevitable.
Yeah. You know,
look at real estate, look at stock markets, look at all those pieces. And how do you handle not selling when it's low and buying when it's high, you know, as the very basic premise.
Yeah. Yep. The other kind of quick points I'll say to keep it tight is the other thing is like having a strong foundation. Yep. You know, you probably shouldn't have put your only $10,000 into option trading. But
it was about the most aggressive thing possible.
But what
again, learning curve.
Yeah. Once you have the base, right? You know, you got all your sort of insurance emergency fund set up, you got groceries in the fridge, and you got some spare cash lying around. Okay. Yep. Now you can take a shot if you want, but not out of the gates. For me, I'm a big planner. Like right now, if anyone follows the stock market, it has been down. The S&P is down. The NASDAQ is down. I just follow my playbook. Like I literally have a chart where the market is down 20%. Okay. Reach into your opportunity fund and deploy this much money. Like, and you can vouch for this. I texted you and I said, I hope the market goes down more.
Like, he's like, I hope this feels, I shouldn't be typing this, but
it does. Like,
yes. Even though it's hard, but you do not want to be buying high and selling low.
I'm very contrarian. Very, you know,
great.
Yeah. And then the last thing is measuring against the timeline and the goal. Yeah. So I know that any money I'm going to deploy during this time is going in for the long term. So if I deploy money today and the market goes down next week and the week after, I don't care. I'm not trying to time the bottom. Like it's a plan. I'm going to invest this much at each. I'm going to layer in and my exit isn't for whatever, 10, 20, 30 years down the road. So measure against that timeline, right? Because you can't get lost in the little ups and downs. It'd be
agreed.
Like putting a dog on antibiotics and then freaking out that 12 hours later, the infection's not gone. And it's like, you know, the timeline, you know, the course of the antibiotics is 14 days. So measure it closer to 10 to 14 days, not in 12 hours.
Great analogy. So important. There are a number of people online that are much smarter than Mike and possibly myself in terms of investing.
There's no chance there's anyone smarter than yourself.
Go find them out. Seek them out. For somebody coming right out of vet school, you know, we've got a whole bunch of new grads coming out this year. There is so much education and learning, and you're going to find the niche that works for you. You're going to find investing path that makes sense. And then it's going to change over time as well too. That's what I'm excited about when we talk about psychological change over time and consequences. You do have the chance to mature, and I'm the perfect example of them, and I'm nowhere there near there yet either.
Well, even, okay, total tangent again, you were very hyped on NFTs, like, and then I got a text recently. You're like, I'm peeling these off. And I was like,
well, I peeled three quarters of them off because they're going to zero. And I was like, all right, I got to readdress. But there's talking about a playbook. I'm also in that for the long term with a small percentage of those NFTs. I don't care if they go up or down or not. They're in a bag right now. They're not going anywhere. I'm so excited about that. Yeah. But I got stuck in recognizing the roses and it's beautiful and the rainbows. And meanwhile, that rainbow came crashing down below the dirt with no pot of gold at the end and going, Johnny, get your head out of your ass. Get back to normal. Again, that's normal, but sure fun. Yeah. And you learn.
And
as hell, I'm not playing with anything there that's not going to be able to put food on my table.
I was just going to say that. That's your play money. Like you just said, you're having fun with that.
Yeah. And again, tail end events. I have an idea that out of those five that I have remaining, if one or two of those go well, my crashing rainbow, I could care less about. Because the tail end of that, for me and what I see happening in that space, long-term, fantastic. And long-term is 5 to 10 years. Long-term is not 1 to 2 years. I could care less. Again, I'm going to forget about what, you know, a couple of those NFTs look like before I look at them again, because it's a long-term investment.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's fantastic.
There we go. Well, we went on multiple tangents today.
Was there not a third question? You said three.
No, we just went to 2B. We went 1, 2, and 2B. That's what you get on the Veterinary Project Podcast.
You never know. If Johnny's hosting, you don't know what's coming.
I've got three more pieces in terms of the pre-recording detail, and we're going to leave those because we have more for all of our listeners in future, because that's what you get with Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Hope you enjoyed this. Leave some comments. Excited for hearing what comes next on the Veterinary Project Podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please shared the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.